It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures brings some of the world's leading authors and speakers to Pittsburgh. For the last 7 years, Executive Director Jane Adair has grown the organization's audience to be one of the largest attended literary series in the country. Ms. Adair plans to retire later this year, so we wanted to speak with her about her experience working with Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures, the upcoming season of speakers, and what it takes to bring those big names to the Steel City. Jane Adair, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. It's great to be here this afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Let's go back in time, and one of the things I'm thinking people are curious about is how you came to be the executive director of Arts and Lectures.
Well, I spent my career in local television. A lot of people remember me from those days. I was actually the executive producer of Pirates Baseball, and this was back in the late 80s, early 90s. So I was around the Pirates during that great Bobby Bonilla, Barry Bonds, Dougie Drayback era.
Sure.
And at the time, Lanny Fritteri was announcer of Pirates Baseball, and at the end of the game, he would always say, "Executive producer of Pirates Baseball, Jane Adair." And I envisioned all these old guys just going, "What? What?" But I loved sports, and I spent a good part of my television career both at KDKA and then at Fox Sports Pittsburgh.
And you were a pioneer, because look how many women are in it now.
Well, I was a vice president and general manager of Fox Sports Pittsburgh during some very turbulent times in sports in this market, too. And that was a great experience. But in 2000, I decided that it had just really – work had taken over my life to a degree that was not healthy. So I pulled away from broadcasting, and then I just – fell into consulting. And one of the places I was consulting was for the Pittsburgh Speaker Series, which is the famous person's speaker series that still is in downtown Pittsburgh and Hines Hall. And I was working with Robert Morris University to find sources of support for those programs. And about that time, Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures was looking for a new executive director. Sylvia Keller, who had only been there for a year, suddenly moved with her husband to start a wonderful new museum in Arizona. So she left much sooner than she had planned. And, you know, my husband and I talked about it, and we thought that this job would enrich our lives. I was not planning to go back to the full-time workplace. But I did, and I'm so happy that I did, because it has been such a satisfying 7 years.
What was the program like when you first got there?
It was largely like it is now. I mean, the major series was a literary lecture series. There used to be 12 lectures. The year that I came, we went to 10 lectures, which seemed to better suit people's schedules. I think the difference is that some of the writers were not as well known to readers here in Pittsburgh. And there wasn't the marketing press that needed to go on to get outside sources of support that the organization absolutely needed to survive. So my marketing experience and my sales experience that had come out of commercial television and that I had also used to find sources of support for the Pittsburgh Speaker Series really stood me in good stead. And I realized right away that we had a very small budget, and we absolutely had to find some affordable ways of marketing the lectures to get the word out to people so that they would know we had these great writers coming to Pittsburgh. And we were able to do that. I must say that we did it by using public radio. We have been great users of all the public radio stations in Pittsburgh, including WESA. And
you mean
have
there
had
are other ones other than
well,
this?
You have had some of our writers on this very show,
for and which we are eternally
and
grateful.
I'm eternally grateful, because that's an enormous help to us in letting people know about the writers. And then we found that book clubs were just a great source of marketing as we started to talk to book clubs and engage book clubs to coming into the hall. Book clubs members started talking to their friends, and that also really helped us.
Who chooses the guests, and what does it take to bring those big names into town?
Well, I really make the first choice. I mean, the executive director is responsible for programming this series, and generally programming every show that we present. But I do it not in a room by myself and thinking about what I want to hear. You have to be successful in doing it, and to get an audience, you have to listen to your audience, you have to listen to your board. We have a budget. We can't get anyone that we want because some writers these days are rock stars, and their fees are way in excess of what we could possibly afford.
Has that changed over the years?
That has changed a lot. When Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures first began in 1991, writers really didn't ask for fees. They were happy with book sales. But in the 23 years that this nonprofit has existed, fees have gone up a lot. And for the major writers, they're quite high. So what I try to do is to work with publishers and try to find name writers when they are on book tours, either a tour for their hardcover book, as Amy Tan was when she came in and was on your show mm-hmm. for Valley of Amazement, or when they're on a soft cover book tour. And that would be someone like Ann Patchett, who would be on a soft cover tour for This is the Story of a Happy Marriage. And when a writer is on tour, book sales are at the top of their agenda. And because we have 1,500 to 1,800 readers in the Carnegie Music Hall, we sell a lot of books. Our book sell is the Mystery Lovers Bookshop. They work to sell books before and after the program, so we can really move the needle on that New York Times book report by the sales that we have here in Pittsburgh.
What have you learned about the kinds of guests that work well in Pittsburgh?
Well, the kinds of writers that work best are, one, writers Pittsburghers know and love, and two, writers that speak well. Those two criteria are absolutely essential to a successful performance, because people come not to read a book by their favorite writer. They come to hear their favorite writer speak. And in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh has always been this way, Pittsburgh is not a big market on putting your money down for someone you never heard, thinking maybe I might like that person. Pittsburgh likes to put their money on the line for someone they know that's familiar, and they know they want to go hear that writer. They may not have read the book yet, but they know that writer and they're very interested, or their friends tell them that they should be interested in hearing that writer. So those are the two most important criteria, that name recognition and the ability to speak. And
the writer has to be able to articulate the process.
Not only articulate the process, because we are in a hall that has three levels and a very high second balcony, and there are 1,800 seats in the Carnegie Music Hall, the writer really has to be able to project from the podium, to have a personality that comes across to the last row in the music hall. And a lot of writers actually are like that, but some writers are not. And I must say, I have had both, but fortunately, with social media, you're able to get a sense of who really is able to project from the stage in a way that will make a very satisfying literary arts experience to the audience. So I think about audiences a lot.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Jane Adair, Executive Director of Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures. She's retiring in May, so we thought we'd get her onto the show now to find all of the insides, to hear all the inside stories. And I'm curious whether you've had to negotiate to get someone to be part of the series, and maybe someone that made you jump through some hoops, and that there's some juicy story there somewhere.
Well, there are many stories, most of which I cannot tell on the radio. there are different criteria that are really important to every writer. So I'm not going to name names, but I have a writer who I adore, and she, in fact, has become a very good friend of mine. And she really has a hotel here in Pittsburgh that she loves to stay in, and I know this. So she stays in this specific place whenever she comes, because that's what is important to her. There are other writers who—
You're not going to tell us who it is?
Nope. There are other writers who want to have Gatorade in their dressing room. There are writers who want to have—
the green M&Ms?
A Hindu vegetarian menu. I don't mind saying that was Neil Gaiman. Neil was very specific about what he wanted in the green room. But, you know, the great thing is that we got Neil to come for the 15th anniversary of Stardust. It was the only public appearance he did to promote that 15th anniversary edition of his classic. So I was happy to go out and find Hindu vegetarian food to get near. I mean, every writer has their specific thing that they like or they don't like, and most of them are within my ability to fulfill. And a happy writer makes a happy audience. That, you know, that's just my feeling. I mean, I'm a producer, just like you are. You know, my years of production of television have really been something that I have fallen back on. And I know that you have to have a happy cast if you want to really have them do good work.
Absolutely. Do you read all of the books that the authors bring in?
I do. I can't read all the backlist, but I do read the book that they're talking about. I mean, it's very important for me to do that.
So, example, if Amy Tan comes in, you're going to make sure you've
read
the
Valley
of
Amazement. And, in fact, I had also read The Bonesetter's Daughter, and I had read Joy Luck Club a long time ago. So I knew about that book. I'd forgotten a lot about it. But
you don't necessarily have a chance to read all of a particular author's.
I can't possibly do that. I wish that I could. I mean, it's one of the things that I look forward to being able to do. I will tell you that sometimes after a writer has been here, this happened to me with Jan Martel, I get so caught up in their writing that I want to go read something else. And Jan had given this list of the most – he had a website that of books that he had given for the Canadian Prime Minister to read, must-read books, because the Canadian Prime Minister was not a reader. And the website, I think it's still up, called What Should Stephen Harper Read? And after Jan came in and I had read Beatrice and Virgil and The Life of Pi, I read A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisevich because it was at the top of Jan's list. And I just loved reading that book. It's very short. I think I read it in about 3 hours. And thinking about him, it had so much more meaning to me. So sometimes I have a problem letting writers go, and I'll read a little bit more after they come.
So among those highlights, what would you say are maybe the top one or two highlights of the 7 years that you've been doing this? Are there things that stand out in your mind as, boy, that was the best moment of all?
Well, I think my favorite moment, it's almost now a recurring moment every year, is when in February I will ask everyone who is a member of a book club in the audience to stand up. And 85% of the audience stands up. And it's young, old, men, women, retirees, all kinds of cultural diversity. Everyone stands up and everyone looks around and goes, wow, look how – I mean, I think it's amazing how strong the book club community is in this city. And it's definitely one reason we are such a literate and literary community. So that is such a satisfying moment to me when that happens. And I'll be asking for that to happen and hoping that the same thing happens on February 10th when Helene Cooper comes in, because that will be a night when we'll recognize our book club members.
And before we wrap up, and being mindful of the fact that you are still on the job,
Jen, I am, definitely.
I want to make sure we say as much as we can about the writers, the lecturers that you have coming in.
I really want to mention Ayel at Waldman, who you're going to have on the 27th of January. Ayel at, it was last year with her husband, Michael Chabon, but she's got a brand new historical novel coming out in April. So she is going to be talking about that and giving us a wonderful preview of that book called Love and Treasure. It's a novel of the Holocaust, the aftermath of the Holocaust. I was just talking to you about it and mentioning that the aftermath of the Holocaust sort of takes over that story. And it's really going to resonate with a lot of Pittsburghers. Then we have Helene Cooper coming in on February the 10th. She's the New York Times correspondent for the White House. She's African-American. She wrote a wonderful memoir called The House at Sugar Beach. And I think she has a unique perspective on the Obama White House. And then just one other one I'll mention, because I know you're short on time. Sonia Sotomayor is coming in on February the 4th. That's a special event, not a lecture. It's a conversation with Chancellor Mark Nordenberg. We still do have tickets left. She's going to be speaking not about any matters in front of the court, but about her memoir, My Beloved World. And I think she's on Fresh Air, actually, this afternoon. So
way to forward promote for
right,
us.
Right,
right.
So it's a wonder. So we're very excited about having her and having Mark on the stage at the same time. And we do have tickets for all three of those programs. So I hope that your listeners will give us a call or go online at PittsburghLectures.org. You can find out information about all of those upcoming programs.
And I believe we'll have a link at our website at WESA.org.
Oh, we're so grateful,
FM,
Paul.
Of course. Jane Adair is the executive director of Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures. She's retiring in May after 7 glorious years on the job. Jane Adair, thanks so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It was a real pleasure.
Coming up, is Penn State's new head football coach the right man for the job? Bob Dvorak weighs in. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.